what your country can do for you.
You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Government is not the solution to our problem.
Constitute an axis of evil.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 17th of December. And this morning, we will add to the sound of critical and moving moments of leadership.
In the coming weeks, I'll use whatever power this office holds to engage my fellow citizens, from law enforcement to mental health professionals to parents and educators, in an effort aimed at preventing more tragedies like this. Because what choice do we have?
That, of course, was President Obama at the memorial service for Newtown victims last evening. The first hour of our program today, we will talk about what that meaningful action may mean. We'll have two guests with us. We also have a fiscal cliff, or whatever you want to call it, looming. So we will talk about movement in that regard as well. We have two guests with us. Adam Winkler is a professor of constitutional law at UCLA. He is the author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Adam Winkler, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And Bob Lowry is also with us, professor and political science program head, School of Economic, Political, and Policy Sciences at the University of Texas at Dallas. Bob Lowry, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Are you there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm here.
There we go. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
We'll be welcoming phone calls, as we always do, and here is how to reach us this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. The president, I thought, gave an extraordinary speech yesterday in Newtown, asking all of us if we're really prepared to say we're powerless in the face of such carnage. Let me ask both of you, what is the power of the presidency to deal with such carnage? What is the power of politics in this country to deal with such carnage? He obviously wants to move us beyond a state where we just feel nothing but extraordinary sadness and a sense that we can do nothing. Adam, would you like to start?
Sure. Well, I think the presidential leadership here is essential. I think that there's a lot of support for gun control in America. However, people are not very intense about it. In other words, people don't become single-issue voters on the issue of gun control unless they're on the pro-gun side, generally. So I think having the president invest his time and effort in emphasizing how important this issue is really essential to motivate people to focus on it and to put pressure on congressmen, especially congressmen from swing areas of the country where the districts are closely divided, to side in favor of gun control.
Bob Lowry, what do you think?
Well, I agree completely as far as the politics, that basically all the single-issue voters are on the pro-gun side. So, yeah, someone would need to sort of mobilize everybody else. You know, I thought an interesting phrase he used, he would use all the power his office holds. Now, does that mean he's going to try to act without Congress? And how much can he do on his own? He can appoint commissions. He can raise consciousness. I don't know. I know Dianne Feinstein, senator from California, has already said she plans to introduce a bill to ban assault weapons. So, I mean, he'll obviously have some allies in Congress. But the other thing that came out of not just his speech, but what everybody else has been saying, is goes a little beyond gun control. In particular, lots of people are raising the issue of mental health.
Yes.
Because so many of these incidents, the shooter has been someone with mental problems, but not so severe that they were, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? That they could really be committed someplace, or get, you know, formally into the system. And so I think that's something that they'll be looking at as well.
Mm-hmm. When the president talked about who would be sitting at the table for this discussion, he talked about law enforcement and teachers and parents. who needs to sit at a table to take on these tremendously huge issues?
Well, I'll throw in one more party, which is the people who write and produce the violent video games. There again, that's something you talk about what can politics in general do. That's something that, because of the First Amendment, may be somewhat beyond the power of the president or Congress to mandate, but nonetheless, someone you might want to try to enlist in a cooperative effort to, you know, maybe take a look at whether these are having an actual impact.
Do they, Adam?
Well, it's very hard to say. It's easy to blame entertainment for violence, but, you know, it's very hard if you were to do a scientific study to determine that is the variable that leads to violence. There's a lot of cultures like Japan that loves violence in its entertainment, and yet there is very little violence that's acted out. I do want to say, with regards to who needs to be at the table when we're discussing this new era of gun control, if indeed we're entering one, is we need to have people on the gun rights side involved in that conversation as well. One of the problems with past gun control efforts is that these laws are often drafted by people who really don't understand guns all that well, and as a result, the laws are not that effective. The federal assault weapons ban of 1994 is a good example of a law that just didn't really have a lot of positive effect on gun crime or anything else, because it was drafted kind of sloppily and covered a lot of the way it decided to cover weapons was quite unusual and didn't really make sense if you knew a lot about guns. So we need people who know and love guns in this conversation too. Otherwise, the laws are not likely to be effective.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? And can you please give me an understanding of, there are a lot of people who are saying over the weekend who are looking at some of these guns and saying, why do people own these kinds of guns that really have only a purpose is to kill a lot of people? It's sort of incomprehensible why they are a part of American society, and there must be some reason for it. Can you please explain that to our audience?
Sure. The gun that was used in this particular shooting and in the Aurora shooting, the AR-15, is the most popular rifle on the market today. It's kind of like the iPhone of guns, if you will. If you like to go to the gun range and shoot guns, this is a gun that people really enjoy shooting. It's very accurate. It's very lightweight. And like an iPhone, you can put apps on it, if you will. You can customize it in a whole bunch of different ways very easily. And so shooters who like to go to the range and shoot find this a very pleasurable gun to shoot. It's not used as a self-defense weapon. It is not a self-defense weapon. I think we could probably ban them with regards to the Second Amendment without running into any serious problems. But it's the reason why people have it is just because most people who have guns and shoot them with any kind of regularity do so because they find it an enjoyable hobby and an enjoyable sport. And this is a particularly enjoyable gun to shoot in that environment. Obviously, it can do great, great harm and danger to a lot of people, and so maybe it's time to think twice about whether having hobbyists have their preferred weapon is enough to justify having these guns in circulation.
The other thing, Bob Lowry, that has come up, of course, is how easy it is to get a gun without any kind of background check. If you're going on the internet, if you're going to a gun show, can you imagine our having a significant conversation about whether or not that's a good idea?
Oh, sure. I think that's one thing that you may be able to get, people on both sides to maybe come together a little bit more. And it, to some extent, it ties into the mental health issue, because you need a way to sort of screen people and identify those who maybe shouldn't have a gun. I mean, I should say that I'm one of those people Professor Winkler talks about who basically knows nothing about guns. So if you're to ask me for any specifics, I don't really know the details, and I would agree with him that you need people who do know the details and know and like guns and to be part of the conversation.
There's also this enormous emotional part to this story, and again, referring to what the president said, are we doing enough to keep our children safe from harm? It's just so hard to take in the fact that this happened to these very, very young children at an elementary school, and that we're hearing that there will be conversations taking place in schools all over the country this morning, concerns that parents have and children have as to whether or not these places that we shouldn't even have to think twice about being safe sanctuaries are not safe.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, I can't, you know, being an elementary school children teacher this morning would be a very, very difficult job. I mean, having said that, there are inner city schools. I don't know about elementary schools, certainly middle and high schools with metal detectors, you know, where this goes on, or at least the possibility of this kind of thing does go on. And maybe they're not observed or, you know, in the consciousness of people in other parts of the country much. But still, this is not the conversation you want to have with seven-year-olds.
Right. What is the importance, Adam Winkler, and let me get a historical perspective here. It seems to me as though we haven't taken on this issue in any big way for some reason, and I'd like for you to explain why we haven't. The president has addressed this in a very moving fashion yesterday. The country has been riveted by this coverage and sickened by what happened. And everybody's been asking, is this the moment that you have to have an event like this in order to address a huge problem? Why haven't we before? We've had many mass shootings before. We've had controversy about this issue before, and yet not very much has happened in terms of gun availability or what's on the market or in terms of access to mental health.
That's right. We've seen one mass shooting after another, from Columbine to Aurora and Gabrielle Giffords and many in between, and didn't find any major reforms coming out of those incidents. Now, in part, I think it's because the way the politics lined up wasn't favorable towards gun control. For instance, I think President Obama for the last 4 years has wanted to avoid talking about gun control. And even after the Aurora shooting, he didn't want to take a strong stand in favor of gun control because that might cost him the election. There's a lot of swing state voters that really feel have very strong attachment to their guns and are afraid of gun control as being the first step on a slippery slope towards total civilian disarmament. But I think the politics are changing. I think President Obama's political calculus must be different today. I think that the NRA suffered through a tough November where not only Mitt Romney, its endorsed candidate, but endorsed candidates all the way down the ballot fared poorly on Election Day. And I think, you know, seeing 20 innocent children just mercilessly slaughtered in a schoolhouse is enough to change the politics for everyone. And I think that we haven't seen a serious discussion in the wake of previous shootings, but we may see that discussion now.
Will we see that conversation now, Bob Lowry?
Well, I think we'll see a conversation. I don't know if I want to make a big prediction on where it will lead. But, yes, I think we will. Like I said, several members of Congress have actually called for appointing a commission, which is something Washington does well. Whether they appoint a separate commission or whether they're is debate around, for example, Senator Feinstein's bill, I think we definitely will see much more of a conversation than we have in the past.
We have, as you can imagine, many people who would like to speak to all of these issues. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email, if you would like to use that today, is talk@wpr.org. And if you're like me, you have been wanting to hear other people's thoughts about all of this, so you may use our Facebook page to do that, the Kathleen Dunn Show, or you can send a tweet to @KDunnShow. Let's start our calls with Sam in Madison. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, dear guest. I have a question and a comment. Among all these mass shootings that you've seen in the past 5 or 6 years, there must be people who were either victims themselves or those people who lost their loved ones who were pro-gun or who are members of NRA or who support gun rights. Does after such incidents their views change? Much like a lot of people I've seen who are very religious and also very anti-gay, but their views change when their own son or daughters end up coming out as gay. So I'm wondering if they're doing a study out there.
Adam, do you know?
I'm not aware of any study. Maybe our co-panelists might know.
I'm not aware of any study of the victims or people involved in the actual incidents. I mean, if you just look at national polls, I think they show that public opinion didn't change very much after the previous incidents.
I wonder if that's going to remain the case after this incident. You know, this incident involving children is stoking more anger and frustration than I've ever seen after a shooting before. And so I do think that the political calculus may be changing. We may see some difference in public opinion polls, especially if we can start focusing on reforms. If we talk about gun control, maybe that's not going to move the needle much. If we talk about requiring background checks for every single person who wants to buy a gun, if we talk about improving mental health reporting data, I think we're going to see very, very strong supermajority support for those kinds of propositions.
We have, and this is probably understandable, not heard very much from the pro-gun lobby after this. Do you imagine we will? That I don't know what their philosophy is here, what would they say, but do you imagine that sometime this week we'll hear a statement from the NRA?
I don't know that we will, or if any statement will be anything but mourning and grieving for the victims. I think the NRA wisely shuts down its communications arm after these kinds of shootings. Anything the NRA says in favor of gun rights is not likely to be taken well. So I think they're going to keep quiet. However, just because they're quiet doesn't mean they're not active. I think there was a story that came out yesterday that some of the Sunday news programs tried to get pro-gun senators to come on the air, and none would appear.
Yes.
And that's because the messaging on the other side is that we need to keep quiet and not say anything. I do think that it's essential that President Obama act quickly, not do things like appoint commissions. Those things delay. Mm. In 6 months' time, the pain from this shooting will have been worn out for a lot of people. And it'll be a lot harder for him to get gun control passed in 6 months than it is today or in the next few weeks.
So you're saying that when you say act quickly, he should be doing something this week?
I think the sooner the better. If he wants to get anything passed, he needs to act quickly. He needs to act smartly. You can't just adopt a law that doesn't make a lot of sense. It won't have any good effect. But I think the political will for gun control tends to fade pretty quickly after these kinds of incidents. Maybe this incident will change how Americans approach guns, but that would be a pretty high risk for him to wait 6 or 7 months for some commission to come in with a report.
Bob Lowry, does he need to act this week if he wants change?
Again, if it involves Congress, I wouldn't try to act this week. I'd wait for the new Congress to be sworn in. But that's only a couple of weeks off. So, acting quickly is probably a good strategy with one caveat, which is you don't want to act so quickly that you do something that isn't, you know, thought through. Maybe try to get something going in January.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest for All Things Political, Adam Winkler, professor of constitutional law at UCLA and author of the very interesting Gunfight, is the book, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Bob Lowry is professor and political science program head at the School of Economic, Political, and Policy Sciences at the University of Texas at Dallas. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow at 9, we'll continue our coverage of the shooting in Newtown and the debate over gun control in America. At 9, we'll be speaking with Colin Goddard, who's a survivor of the Virginia Tech massacre. He still has 3 bullets in his body from that massacre. It left 32 people dead. He survived 4 gunshot wounds that day and has gone on to become the Assistant Director of Victims and Youth Advocacy and Federal Legislation for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. Also tomorrow, Richard Florida on the geography of gun violence in America. We go back to phone calls for our All Things Political guests and Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi. A couple quick comments and a question. You know, money in politics, you know, this is a good time to discuss this. If the NRA didn't have the political power they have, which is questionable, we could probably move forward. We did hear the NRA through the whole election last time talk about, you know, this president is coming for your guns. And so we're in a real tight spot as to try to see how intelligent people really are. We're going to see them blame everything else, mental health, video games, and Hollywood. The problem is other countries have problems with mental health, video games, and Hollywood, and they don't have the shootings that we have here. We have access to ammunition that rips bodies apart. We have access to guns that only the military should have. And my question is, how many of these shootings like this occurred when we had the assault weapons ban that just expired? How many of these attacks happened when that assault weapons ban was in effect? And how many have occurred since that ban has expired?
Adam Winkler.
Yeah, well, of course, Columbine, which was an awful shooting, happened when the assault weapons ban was in effect, and we did have other mass shootings during that time. You know, the truth is a mass shooter doesn't need an assault weapon to go in and do his damage. A mass shooter can bring in an ordinary firearm like the one that every police officer has on their hip, usually one with 17 rounds of ammunition, can bring extra magazines with him already preloaded, pop the old expended magazine out, put a new one in less than a second, and fire another 17 rounds. I think that, one of the problems with the old assault weapons ban that we had was that it based its ban on weapons on certain superficial characteristics. It was any semi-automatic rifle or firearm that also had a variety of other characteristics like a folding buttstock or a bayonet lug. And yet, those are not the things that really lead to a weapon being more dangerous. We could try to ban all semi-automatic firearms, but there's probably about 150 to 175 million of those out in America in circulation. Including virtually every police officer has a semi-automatic. Virtually every gun you see these days, every handgun you see these days, is semi-automatic. Not everyone, but the vast majority of them. So it's very easy to fire a lot of rounds of ammunition. I don't think that there's a clear tie between the assault weapons ban expiring and this particular offense, but maybe it is time that we start looking at ways we can restrict the size of magazines so that people can't get off as many shots as quickly.
Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit earlier about the pro-gun people not agreeing to be on television programs yesterday like Meet the Press. They declined. The person who has been front and center, of course, in this country has been the mayor of New York City, Mr. Bloomberg, who had this to say, and let's get into a discussion about how politically powerful the NRA has been and may continue to be. Here's what Bloomberg had to say yesterday on Meet the Press.
If Congress were to act, if Congress wasn't so afraid of the NRA, and I think I can show you that they have no reason to be, but if they were to stand up and do what was right for the American public, we'd all be a lot better off. And Congress has the ability to do this. And the president, in my view, is the one who has to lead this. The president campaigned in 08 on an assault weapon ban. And the only gun legislation that the president has signed since then, one is the right to carry a gun in national parks where our kids play, and one is the right to carry guns on Amtrak.
What do you think about those comments, Bob Lowry? The influence of the NRA, whether or not we think they are more powerful than they really are. And I'm kind of interested in why it is that the president, you know, signed that kind of legislation. He obviously has had a change of heart here, but who was he succumbing to?
As far as the NRA goes, I mean, they are, I think they are powerful, and it goes back to what one of the first comments Professor Winkler made, is that there's organization and there's money on one side of the debate. And so, you know, when there's not big organized opposition or the president isn't out there leading the charge, the NRA has a lot of influence. And not only that, it's not uniformly distributed. It tends to be highly concentrated in rural districts and in districts that elect Republicans anyway. But the thing about, again, dealing with Congress, it's not national polls or national influence that matters. It's whether you can influence 218 members of the House and 51 members of the Senate. I think they do have a lot of power, but again, they haven't had a lot of organized opposition. Now, Mayor Bloomberg himself has a super PAC, which I understand financed and opposed several pro-gun candidates in the last election and actually beat some of them. So, you know, his own money and the president's influence, you might be able to get some organization going the other way. I really don't know why the president signed those particular bills, but one thing that I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about the questioner earlier who called in about the NRA, one response that many pro-gun advocates make to incidents like this is that the response is to have other people on site who are armed.
Right.
In all seriousness, the one person who went on the TV shows yesterday was Louie Gohmert, who's a House member from East Texas, and he said that whole situation might have been different if the principal of the school had a gun in her office. And living in Texas, I can tell you that's the basic response of the pro-gun groups.
Adam Linkler, do we overestimate the importance of the NRA, I mean the power, the strength of the NRA?
Well, I think we do in some ways, but I do understand why Democrats have been fearful of the NRA. Ever since the assault weapons ban was enacted in 1994 and preceded by the Brady background check in 1993, the last two major pieces of federal gun control legislation, it's been the conventional wisdom among Democrats that their support for gun control led to the Republican takeover of the House in 1994, the first time the Republicans had a majority in the House in almost half a century. Even Bill Clinton said that was the reason why Republicans won. So as a result, Democrats made it sort of an informal plank in the party, avoid gun control at all costs. But I do think that it is changing somewhat. We talked a little bit about how the political environment has changed. It really depends on what happens at Election Day. I think people overemphasize the power of money in explaining the NRA's influence on politics. I think the NRA is so powerful not because it has a lot of money, although it does. The NRA is powerful because it can deliver voters. There's a lot of single-issue pro-gun voters that can be activated by the NRA. However, we've seen in the past November election, they weren't very successful at activating those voters. They've been going hard against President Obama now for two straight elections to no success. So maybe people are starting to wonder whether they can still deliver the kinds of votes that they were able to deliver back in 1994.
Mm-hmm. John in Madison, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
First, I'd just like to say, one, I'm not a member of the NRA, and, all these shootings are terrible things, but that comment earlier about the Texas lawmaker who suggested more guns, I'd like to get to the root of that. I think, what I really think should happen is more mental health coverage. That I'm really happy to hear about. But then also create a culture of everyone needs to be a shepherd for everyone else. I was actually on my drive back from Chicago yesterday. I was thinking of maybe a citizen's creed where we all just, if everyone cares for each other, both, hey, you don't seem to be doing too well, and suggest that they go get mental health treatment. And two, when an emergency does happen, like the teacher that I read an article about who hit her children away in the classroom, if people take care of each other and go, I'm not going to be a victim, but I'm going to stand up and try to take care of everyone else around me in any kind of emergency, not just gun violence, but natural disasters, anything, I think a lot of these situations wouldn't be nearly as bad as they are. We are in America. We have a culture where guns are a part of the life here, and it would be a drastic change to change that. I generally don't believe it's a good idea to, but I'm open to new ideas. But I'd just rather see violence control, like you said, more access to mental health, and more of a culture where everyone takes responsibility for themselves and those around them, that everyone cares for each other.
Bob Lowry.
Well, it's hard to argue against that as, an ideal. A reality is, first of all, I think, all the evidence we have is that the teachers at this school really, they did that. I think the president used the line that they responded in the way all of us wish we would if we were in the same circumstance. And several of them lost their lives as a result.
Right.
you know, the again, I keep sort of coming back to this mental health issue, and it's not just a matter of if you know someone might have a problem, it's being able to get them help. And you know, the way the system is set up now, it's very hard to get someone help who doesn't want help until they do something that really, you know, goes over the line of the law. And you hope that the first time that happens isn't, I mean, this apparently was the first time that this person, this shooter, had really done anything that might bring the authorities, you know, involved. And we don't know what his mother was doing. There was a very moving story that I think has been all over the internet the last day or two. It was a blog by a mother who has a 13-year-old son with mental health issues, and talking about, you know, sort of her fears and the frustration she's had of trying to get help for him.
Yeah, the other thing, though, that a lot of people have said is the mother had a house filled with guns,
right,
and took her children target shooting all the time.
Right, exactly. So you sort of, when she obviously knew that her son had issues.
Right.
So, I mean, like I said, I have no idea why she decided to do that.
Right. Adam, let's put this question to you. This is Arlen in Green Bay. Gun control would most likely not prevent these tragedies in our schools. Criminals will illegally obtain guns somehow. I feel we need to enact legislation to hire at least one security guard for every public school in the country. Also, we need to make it a requirement that every person who walks through an open school door must go through a metal detector.
The idea that preventing these kinds of mass shootings is probably not the appropriate goal. And I only say that because I agree with the emailer that we're not going to stop a madman from getting their hands on guns and doing a lot of violence. But I tell you what we can do. It's easy to forget in the wake of this horrible shooting that same day on Friday that 80 people were killed by gunshot wounds. About 40 through suicide, about 35 or so through homicide, over and above what happened at that school. I think that's a number we can bring down. I think we can focus our policies on improving background checks, improving mental health data reporting into the background check system, and those things will make it harder for some people to get their hands on guns. If we can bring that number of 80 a day down to 79 a day, to 78 a day, not a huge difference, but those are people that are being tucked in by their parents or saying goodnight to their loved ones every night. And every month we'll be saving as many people as lost their lives in this shooting. So I agree that focusing on mass shootings probably isn't the right way to focus on our policy. But there's a daily death toll from guns that we can do something about and we should do something about. And hopefully this kind of incident will inspire us to do something about it.
Our phone number for you to join this conversation, it's All Things Political, and we are focusing on what the president asked in his important address last night. Are we prepared to say we're powerless in the face of such carnage? He also said that he would use the power of his office to gather people to take some kind of action so that we can do whatever is within our power to keep our children safe from harm. We have two guests with us, Adam Winkler, professor of constitutional law at UCLA, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Bob Lowry is professor and political science program head at the School of Economics at the University of Texas at Dallas. More phone calls today. I give you the number 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And if you'd like to send tweet, you can do that at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number, and we go back to phone calls. Doug in Bayfield is next. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Yeah, I'd just like to make a couple of points. You know, I've listened. This is just a terrible thing that's happened, but I've listened to all the statements the president's made in the speeches in the last few days, and he has yet to mention gun control. He said we need to take action, and I think it's a much, much bigger issue than gun control alone, and it seems like you know, the major politicians are right away jumping on gun control. The media is jumping on gun control, and if you, they had an interesting site on the internet this morning, listed some of the world's worst mass shootings in the last 15 years, and some of the worst of them are in countries that have some of the tightest gun controls in the world, such as Norway last year. There was two in England. And I just think it's a much bigger issue than gun control, and people need to be talking about other issues, too.
Would you agree, Doug, that gun control needs to be discussed?
I agree it needs to be discussed, but everybody is making it like the panacea that if we pass new laws controlling guns, that it's going to solve these things that happen, and it isn't.
Adam.
Well, unfortunately, I do agree that we will see more of these incidents regardless of what kinds of gun control laws we have. Absent getting rid of all the guns, which in a country with 300 million firearms seems profoundly unrealistic, I think we're going to see more incidents like that. Yet, I still want to emphasize, there are things we can do. We can make a difference. We can save people's lives. We can pass effective laws that can reduce that number of 80 people a day who are dying from gunshot wounds. There's just no reason why that number needs to be that high. And no law is a panacea. Any law that is enacted has to deal with the fact that there are 300 million guns already in America, and so its effect will only be at the margins. But we should never forget that when we're talking about the margins, we're talking about human lives. And if we can require requiring a background check for every single person who buys a gun saves one or two lives a month, that's well worth doing.
Mm-hmm. There is something unnerving, Bob Lowry, when you watch the news all the time to have this number of mass shootings. We had the horrors in Oak Creek at the Sikh Temple. We had a salon in Brookfield, Wisconsin, where people were gunned down. We've got Portland. We've got Aurora. We've got Gabby Giffords. I mean, it's one after another, and sometimes they're a week apart. And the president said, and I think that everybody agreed with him, we can't tolerate this anymore. We can't. You really can't tolerate that happening anywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, trying to think about my experience and, you know, just, you know, in the time I've been, you know, alive and watching the news, Columbine is about the first one I can really think of. I mean, I know there were some incidents in the 80s. There was a postal worker who went to work and killed a bunch of employees and so forth. But starting with Columbine, there's just been an increasing number of these. And I don't, you know, again, it's hard to say what the cause specifically of any one is, except that a lot of them involve, well, they almost all involve young males, young male adults, and a number of them are mentally disturbed or, you know, have at least some sort of mental issues. When you say we can't tolerate that, okay, so, but what exactly are you going to do? I mean, you can go all the way back through American history to the Federalist Papers, and there's lots of things we don't want to tolerate, but the cure might be worse than the disease if you think about what you'd have to do to literally eliminate them.
Yeah. Well, the caller mentioned Norway and mentioned some shootings in England. When you look at the United States, Adam Winkler, compared to other countries, it's my understanding that we have many, many more deaths from gun-related violence in this country. Is there something peculiarly American about our need to have weapons that maybe nobody should have? Is there something about an American culture? Why is it that we have these huge numbers, and in other countries like Norway, this would be a rare, rare occurrence?
That's right. Americans do have not only a propensity for violence, we have a relatively violent society, but we also do have this unusual fascination with firearms. And I think it does stem in part from our nature as a country born out of a revolution, where one of our founding moments was Paul Revere saying the British are coming. You know, one of the reasons why the British were coming was because they were trying to steal a stockpile of arms that were being held by the militiamen in Concord and Lexington. But also our Wild West is very much part of the American culture. What I've tried to argue in my book Gunfight, however, is that while we do have a culture of guns, we also have a gun control culture. That gun control is as much a part of the story of guns in America as the Second Amendment and the six shooter. The Founding Fathers had gun control laws. The frontier towns of the Wild West had the most restrictive gun laws in the nation. That gun control is a very much a part of the story, and we shouldn't look at the right to bear arms as something that really imposes a serious impediment to reasonable and effective gun control laws.
What kind of gun control did the Founding Fathers have, Adam?
Well, the Founding Fathers barred large portions of the population from having guns. When they thought people were a threat to public safety, they were willing to take guns away from them. So, for instance, slaves and free blacks, not only did they not have rights, but the reason why they were denied access to guns in particular is because they were thought to be a threat. They would rise up and overturn the slave system. But also, not just racial minorities, but law-abiding white citizens were sometimes disarmed, in particular loyalists around the time of the Revolution. People who refused to swear an oath of loyalty to the Revolution were subject to disarmament. We're not talking about people who were traitors or people who were fighting for England, just people who were exercising their freedom of conscience to think that these 13 disunited colonies taking on the greatest military power in the world was a mistake. So the Founding Fathers had gun control laws. They didn't call it gun control, but they recognized that the right to bear arms is not a libertarian license for anyone to have any gun anywhere they want.
Jason in Appleton, hi.
Hey, just wanted to throw in my two cents. I've been reading a lot over the weekend, just a lot of crazy statistics I've been coming across. And I mean, if you look at the United States and our per capita gun violence, the only handful of countries that have more gun violence than the United States per capita, we do not want to live in. There are countries like Colombia and Guatemala are on the list. That's scary, first of all. I'm wondering, you know, you look at every other country that doesn't have anywhere near the gun violence, all of Europe and Asian countries, they all have hip-hop music, they all have violent movies, they all have violent video games. That stuff is global. They all have social media. What almost all of them do have and we don't have is much more restrictive gun control laws. And I don't know, unless your guest knows of, they all have crazy people too. We can't forget that. So I'm wondering, what other things are there out there that would make them have so much less and us have so much more? I'm confused.
Bob, do you want to weigh in on this?
Well, I think we need to make a distinction, as has been made, between these big incidents, these mass killing incidents, and the, you know, one at a time street corner violence, that sort of thing, that over the, you know, the span of a year or a month in a country like this adds up to a lot of deaths. And what you see is, yeah, Norway, Britain, they have the occasional mass killing. And people look at that single incident and they want to draw inferences. But I think the more telling statistics are, as the caller mentioned, sort of the per capita deaths averaged over the course of the year. And on there, yeah, it seems the countries that have much tighter restrictions on guns have much less of that kind of thing. The the suicides from guns, the family violence, the street corner gangs, that kind of stuff. And so I think that's where the real difference is.
Heidi writes, Adam, let's give this one to you. Should gun manufacturers be required to participate in programs to ensure responsible gun use and make sure these weapons don't get into irresponsible hands, similar to cigarette companies being required to make changes for the sake of public safety?
Well, I think so. I think part of the problem is that with regards to the daily 80 people that die from gunshot wounds, a good portion of those are the victims of recidivist criminals with guns. What we know is that because of the gun rights proponents' fear of gun registration and having guns confiscated, we don't have a good system by which we can identify where guns are going, if they're being stolen, who's stealing them, when they are stolen, where do they go. We just have very bad record keeping when it comes to guns and how they get from a manufacturer into a criminal's hands, because law enforcement has really been handcuffed by the extremists in the gun rights world, fear of registration and confiscation. We should be clear that there is a right of individuals to have a gun in their home for personal protection. The Supreme Court has said as much. The Second Amendment says as much. It's time that we recognize that as long as that right exists, no one's coming to take away all the guns, that we can leave people with self-defense weapons and still take reasonable action to trace guns, to know where they are, who's got them. And so when there are mental health problems or criminal offenses, the law enforcement has the knowledge and the data to ability to go and take those guns away from people who are prohibited from having them.
Mm-hmm. Bob Laurie, I need to ask you, in the midst of all of this, which is really absorbing our minds and our souls and will continue as the burials take place of these teachers and young children during the course of this week, well, which is going to be hard to watch, I read somewhere that perhaps this makes it easier for people who have very different ideas to get together, and it may have ramifications beyond gun control. It may even make politicians on different sides of the aisle more easy to come to agreement about how we keep from going over the fiscal cliff. Is that a wild idea?
I think so. I mean, with specific reference to the fiscal cliff, I mean, I think, yes, politicians will come together and they will talk about issues related to gun control and background checks and mental health and all this sort of thing. I don't know if it's really going to make them any more likely to reach an agreement on the tax and spending issues and the fiscal cliff. Having said that, I mean, again, some of the little bit of news about that we had over the weekend does suggest some movement.
Yes. And what is that movement?
Well, I think the biggest single thing is apparently Speaker John Boehner has suggested he might be willing to consider tax rate increases for those making $1 million or more,
mm-hmm.
whereas the president says $250,000 or more. And the thing about budgets is it's all just numbers and money. And once you start, both sides admit that they're willing to consider the same sort of change, then it's easy enough to see a solution where you split the difference. You know, on the other side now, the more sticking issue is on the spending side, where, you know, exactly what sorts of things would the Democrats be willing to consider? And then just that we're running out of time. I mean, can they put a deal together before January 1st?
Right. Let's go to Ron in Bellevue, Iowa. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kathleen. I thought we were talking about gun control. All of a sudden, it's a fiscal cliff. Anyway.
Well, we talked about it because our guest is an expert, one of our guests, and we're going to have him on for the hour. We had no idea what was going to happen last week, so that's why we talked about it for a moment.
All right. Who makes the guns? Who makes the money off of the sale of these guns?
Adam.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of gun manufacturers. There's no doubt about that. There's also a lot of gun dealers. You go to some parts of the country, it seems like there's a gun dealer, a gun store every two blocks. It's definitely a very profitable industry. And in fact, since President Obama has taken office, in part because the NRA and the gun lobby has been telling gun owners that he's coming to get your guns, it's been one of the most profitable businesses in America. In fact, it's been, some people have said it's like the exception in this terrible economy because these gun makers are showing record profits. And the truth is one of the ironies of gun control is that as we push for gun control, gun owners get fearful that they won't be able to buy these guns tomorrow. So they go out today and buy lots of them.
Thank you, Ron, for the call. One more call, then we're out of time for this discussion. Tony in New Hampshire. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how you doing, you guys?
Okay, how are you?
Okay, I'm an avid gun owner. I, in the past, supported the NRA. I'm an avid hunter. I own bolt-action rifles. Bolt-action rifles basically hold three shells. I believe that we need gun control. This whole thing makes me nauseous. I have three children. I fought in three wars. The M16, the AR-15, all of them, they are high, in a way, they're high tech. They're cheap. But you have to keep them very clean. There is no need for a hunter or anyone to own an assault rifle. If you want to be a hunter, that's fine. Own a rifle. You need to carry two bullets, one for your first shot and one if the animal is not dead at the time.
On that note, we have to say goodbye to the show. I'm glad you called, Adam, or Tony, and I think you're right. The whole story just makes us sick. Adam Winkler, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Bob Lowry, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Our guest, Adam, who is professor of constitutional law, he's written a fascinating book. We've talked to him about it on a previous show, Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Bob Lowry is professor and political science program head at the School of Economics, Political and Policy Sciences at University of Texas at Dallas. Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning produce this program. Thanks to both of them, and thanks to you for your calls. We'll be on this subject tomorrow and also the next hour of the program with how we're dealing with all of this in our hearts.